Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Hello there, and welcome to today's episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. If we haven't met before, my name is Monica Burns. I'm a former New York City public school teacher, and I've been out of the classroom for a few years, leading professional development for teachers and writing about all things EdTech on my blog, classtechtips.com. Before we jump into today's episode, a quick reminder. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes and resources from today's episode. And if you're listening to this episode on a podcast player like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, you should see a link in the description that you can click on as you listen today, and it will take you to all the resources I mentioned. This episode is sponsored by Microsoft Education, and I'm so excited to partner with them this summer. Have you seen the new Reading Progress tool in Microsoft Teams? It's totally free and will transform the way you think about reading fluency. I was completely blown away when I saw Reading Progress in action, and I know you will be too. Just go to aka.ms/readingprogresspp to find out more about the free Reading Progress tool in Microsoft Teams. You can also send me a DM on Instagram, and I'll make sure to get you the link. And as we talk today, you hear me, or you hear us, I should say, mention some resources. Don't worry, they're all linked wherever you're listening to this episode, or you can head to classtechtips.com/podcast, where you'll also find the information from today, the show notes page with all of the links you'll want to see. Welcome, Erin and Ross. I am so excited to have you on the podcast today to talk all things PBL. Before we jump in to project-based learning, kind of the logistics, the things to consider, how to stay organized, all of those topics, and talk a little bit about your new book, I'm hoping that you can share a bit about your role in education, what your day-to-day looks like. Maybe, Erin, you can start off for us.
Sure. So my official title is I'm the K-12 Humanities Supervisor for a school district in just outside Allentown, Pennsylvania. And what my day-to-day usually looks like in pre-COVID times is spending a lot of time in classrooms, coaching teachers, coaching principals, thinking about instruction, instructional design. Recently, though, my job has just been crisis response, I guess. I think that's what most administrators have been doing.
Yeah. And Ross, what about you? What does your day-to-day look like? Tell us a little bit about your role.
Yeah. So right now I am an assistant principal at Roaring Brook School in Chappaqua Central School District in Westchester, New York. The day-to-day, to be honest, well, kind of as Erin said, outside of a pandemic, more leadership. Now, leadership as well, but a lot of management thrown in. Not that the two are mutually exclusive, because in many instances, management and leadership go hand in hand. But this year in particular, because of the pandemic, a lot of sub coverage. We're really into sub coverage. Sub coverage, scheduling, and just to be honest, just really making sure everybody's okay, taking care of people's basic needs, one-on-one conversations, small group conversations, sort of like when you meet with students, right? One-on-one small group. And just touching base with people on a regular, consistent basis and just making sure everybody's okay and just helping to make sure that their school runs smoothly. That's a big part of what we're doing this year.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you both said about the responsiveness of your roles, right? And the adaptability of what it is that you're doing. And I think it, you know, as we talk about this idea of project-based learning and your new book today, right, there can be a lot of moving parts, just like, and what it sounds like your day-to-days have been like all the time, but especially this year. And so, you know, that term project-based learning, which we're talking about today, it might be new for some listeners or one that they've heard, but isn't part of their everyday practice. Can you tell us a little bit, you know, what does PBL mean? What does it look like in action?
You know, you have all these different definitions of project-based learning. And I think for any instructional shift or initiative we tackle, there could be multiple definitions. And I think it's very, to your kind of what you're getting at, Monica, it's important that in any given organization, when we use these terms, whether it's project-based learning, reading and writing workshop, STEM, differentiated instruction, makerspace, whatever it might be, that within our organization, when we use these terms, that we all mean the same thing. And I think oftentimes with professional learning, we jump over that kind of calibration a bit, and we get right into like the so-called like cool stuff, right? Mm-hmm. To answer your question, to define project-based learning, more or less, we look at it as an inquiry-based instructional unit, right? It's a unit. You know, there's those lesson plans, and then there are those unit plans, right? We look at project-based learning as more holistic teaching and learning, so it's the unit plan approach, but students are at the center of it through inquiry-based learning, which is teaching and learning primarily through investigation and exploration. That's really how we define project-based learning in short. Like, that's like the elevator pitch. And then, of course, like, you could get into certain components if you want, right? You could get into, okay, like, are we prioritizing standards? Is there, we call them high impact takeaways or enduring understandings, or an umbrella question, which is also called an essential question, self-assessment, peer assessment, mini lessons, extended lessons, mm-hmm. student reflection and publishing. So like, those could be like the different components that you might say as an organization are the non-negotiables of project-based learning. Like, every time we have a unit that we define as project-based learning, it must have those components. But in short, we look at it as a student-centered, inquiry-based unit.
Wonderful. And Aaron, what does this look like, you know, in action where you are or in what you've been working on?
Yeah, I think that it emerges in different ways. So our district actually launched a project-based school this year called the Jasper Initiative. So right now, I'll be honest, like, PBL happens more in pockets in my current district, but places that we consult with, I think that the in-action part looks different in the way that Ross just described, right? So depending on teachers' readiness, districts' readiness. So some places are like, that's it. We're going to be all project-based all the time. This is what's happening, and often bring us in to sort of like roll it out. Where other places are like, we know this is a good practice. In Jersey in particular, their new state standards really align to the project-based approach. So, you know, I think people are kind of thinking like, okay, how do I get started? So I think the way Ross described it as a continuum is really how it needs to be thought of, because different people can be at different places on that continuum, and different environments, different groups of students, different content require a different place on the continuum also.
Yeah. And I would imagine that when you're working or talking with a group of math educators at a secondary level, or with elementary educators, you know, in a third or fourth or fifth grade classroom, that some of those conversations are different around what it might look like for them within a particular unit or a different part of the year or year four for them in their professional, you know, implementation of bringing PBL into their environment. And, you know, whether an educator has a few years of experience or is jumping in for the first time, you know, one thing I often hear from classroom teachers, from coaches, even from school leaders who are thinking through the implementation, right, of something new, is how to stay organized, right? The logistics of what PBL might look like. And so, you know, from that teacher perspective, do you have any, you know, tech tips? Do you have any tools or platforms that can help a teacher, you know, plan through and stay organized throughout that unit to interact with students as they are working through face-to-face or remotely some of that project progress? Would love to hear where some of your go-to platforms or places are for recommending to educators.
We often don't like name drop specific tech tools, just because I think, and this sounds redundant at this point, but like, I think different people need different things. I am hesitant to be like, oh, you definitely want to do this in Schoology if your district happens to be a Google Classroom district, and then it feels like, oh, I'm never going to be successful because I don't have Schoology. So I think that the real important thing is that whatever you pick, you should stick to it. So whatever that hub, we call it a digital hub. So whatever you choose to use as your digital hub, unless it's really not working and you need to like jump ship, that's cool because it happens to all of us. But once you pick that thing and you sort of condition and prepare your students to use it, and you and families for that matter, you don't want to constantly be pivoting to something else. So if you build everything in Schoology, or if you build everything on a website, make sure that it's consistent so that you're not constantly reteaching that specific practice. And then we just like, we sort of talk about like the core things that should be available in that place. Like, so you need to make sure that your project directions are there. And it, you know, often your project directions, you typically have like a static version and then an interactive version. So like, you're going to want to make sure that those things are in that space. Whatever the kids are sort of filling out during the research project, that's going to be in that space. And again, my default for like interactive directions is often a Google Doc. But if you happen to be a Microsoft district and you're using, what is it, OneNote? I don't know. And you're using that instead, that's fine. Just, you know, make sure that then it's consistent.
I think too, you know, one of the things I've been sharing with people this year, and I'm sure you all are kind of feeling the same way, you know, is that like embrace your place, right? Like, what's your LMS? What are you feeling comfortable with? What are tools, if you're already a Google Docs person, right? Is that the place where you're going to have kids maybe collaborate or work together in some way? And Ross, I'd love to hear from you if you've got anything to add on there as well.
Yeah, I think also all this creates predictability for us and the students, but it doesn't, it's important that it creates predictability that then allows us, that cuts through any like confusion and allows us to really put the emphasis on the project itself and the project's learning goals. So it's not really, by having some of the same materials from project to project, or the same platform from project to project, or same place where we store everything from project to project, that routine's important, right? It's not taking away inquiry. It's not taking away any investigation and exploration. It's something that we would do as adults. We tend to use certain apps. We tend to use certain programs on our computer. And that's just the type of environment we're creating for our students. So on top of that, a couple other things I'll add. One is that how you set up your digital hub, keeping that consistent from project to project as well. So there might be like a couple of different sections. Like one of them's for maybe the content. Maybe one of them is a second section for research. And then maybe there's another section that's like, where you could act something that's not project specific, like tools to help students with research or help them with presenting, or like basically those resources that they're going to need to access across multiple projects, right? This could be as simple as like a Google Doc, or it could be something like an LMS, like Google Classroom, Schoology, Canvas, or whatever it might be. So just thinking about how you're not just bringing consistency to what you're, the platform that you're using, but also how you set up those resources for your students on the platform, I think is important. And we outlined that in our book. And I think I did a pretty good job of giving you a summary of it. So that's one. And then the other thing is like, kind of as Erin alluded to, like the common denominators, like what are those things, once again, regardless of the project that students are going to have. So it's like we think like directions should be one page, like one page of directions, eight and a half by 11 piece of paper, one-sided, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the directions. You have the interactive directions. You have your rubric, or we call it a progress assessment tool, which is a simplified version of the rubric. Maybe you give students actually a physical folder so they could store all project related papers there. So like all of those things that it's almost like a ritual, like whenever there's a project, mm-hmm. here are the things you're going to get. And once again, that routine helps to put the emphasis on the project and its learning goals and helps to cut through the confusion.
Yeah, it sounds like that emphasis on systems and routines and just that sort of set of expectations that you're building for students can really help someone who might be kind of doing this for the first time, but anticipating that they are going to come back into this same format a few times over the course of the school mm-hmm. year. So I think that's a really great way to, you know, set up kids for success, help them stay organized. And as you're, you know, thinking through that kind of organizational piece, you know, there's so many transferable skills that come into play with giving kids an opportunity to take some ownership of what they're working on. Are there any strategies or any kind of pieces around that that you really like to incorporate to help kids stay organized or take some ownership of that project?
So I think that what we often lean on as an explanation related to this question of like, how do we get kids to continue to take ownership? The less that we do by ourselves and the more that we do with our students, the closer they're going to come to being able to take on that ownership themselves. So like, for example, rather than like fully designing the rubric or the project assessment tool that Ross described, rather than doing all of that ourselves, modeling or doing it with our students. So perhaps we identify what the learning targets are. So like in this unit, these are the learning targets that we're going to need to hit. What might it look like while we do that? So then maybe we have kids look at exemplars, exemplar projects, or exemplars of, you know, if it's a piece of writing, or if it's a piece, if it's a policy that we're having kids examine, have them look at examples and then extract from the examples what that learning target might look like. So do that thinking with them. And then that allows them then to take ownership over the assessment process, because now they were a piece of it. So it feels less like something that was being done to them. And that helps them in the future, right? Because we as human beings doing our jobs are constantly thinking about, okay, am I doing this based on the metric it's going to be measured on? Am I doing, like, is there something that I personally want to do better related to this topic? So again, it's sort of, as you said, it sort of models a good life skill moving forward.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's definitely front of mind for educators when they're, you know, kind of talking about PBL or wondering about the value and why they might want to bring it in, or some of those kind of, you know, all of these are real, you know, everything we're doing in the real world feels like real world skills, right? But things that are very transferable to different environments is sometimes how I frame it. And, you know, your book, which I've got a couple copies here in my office and I'm excited to give away to listeners, is all about project-based learning from a real question, real answers perspective. So what are some of the top questions you hear or that you get from your, you know, your work in the field, or one that really jumps out to you that you want to share here that people can learn more about in the book?
To expand upon what you said, each chapter, I'm looking at the book now, there's an introduction in 8 chapters, and each chapter is built around one of those questions. But also we made sure the way it's formatted is that as a result of reading through the book, not only will your questions be answered, but you'll learn how to actually do project-based learning. So it's not like an FAQ where you read all the answers and you're like, wait a minute, I still don't know how to do PBL. It's the best of both worlds, we believe. I think the biggest one we probably get, and we kind of lead with this, one is like, how do we structure a PBL experience, right? And we threw that at the reader right after. That's chapter one, right after the introduction, which is why PBL. It's how do I structure a PBL experience? And we thought it was important to lead off with that because we framed that from the very beginning. And then for the most part, the rest of the book then fills in the gaps. Rather than explaining or detailing the entire experience throughout the duration of the book, we wanted the reader to have that context early on. We thought that was really important. And we think that's something else that's really unique to our book. So basically, like, how do I plan for it? Like, I know that sounds like maybe simple, but a lot of people, like, you hear about PBL, you read about PBL, you watch these videos, like that's how it started for all of us. And you're like, how the heck do I plan for it? Like, give me a template, give me something. And then probably the other one is, how do I get grades, right? And that's a really big one. And if you were to, you know, even read a little bit into that chapter, which is chapter number 2, we know that if we're asking that question, then maybe perhaps our thinking is in the wrong place. Because we know that as much as possible, we want to put the emphasis on the feedback and the assessment as opposed to grades. But of course, we know that there are some instances in which grades are needed, given the organizations and the constraints of our systems. So we have an answer for that as well. But the majority of the chapter is dedicated to feedback as it relates to a project's learning goals or learning targets, and then self-assessment and peer assessment. And that self-assessment, we think, is really vital. Like, it's, you know, in order for students to really, you asked before about like students having ownership over their own learning. Self-assessment is really one of those huge non-negotiables and one of those high impact teaching and learning practices that we could implement at all times, whether students are engaged or not engaged in project-based learning. Like, really, student self-assessment should be the cornerstone of any thriving classroom.
And I love that. And you mentioned there that, you know, the framing of the book or the organization of the book is, yes, you know, a response to these common questions, but then the action items that go along with it. So that idea of feedback and the assessment questions, I just think that's such a great way to organize a text. And it kind of brings me to this last big question I want to pose to you all. And I always love hearing behind the scenes stories about working on books. And I know a lot of listeners here, I've, you know, heard from different authors in the education space, and this isn't your first collaboration together, but what was it like, you know, working on this book? How was it different than the first time out?
You know, when we wrote the first book, I think we wrote the first book from start to finish, I think in like 3 months. And, you know, we lived nearby each other at that time. And so it's sort of like we each took a chapter and we kind of like took a stab at it. And then we essentially locked ourselves in Ross's apartment for several weekends in a row. Mm-hmm. And then just went through the book and wrote it together. And that was ideal because Ross has really good taste in food. And he bought me a lot of really good food during that time. So writing Hacking PBL was probably my favorite. And then this book, instead of 3 months, took us almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. It took much longer. It started out sort of as one thing and turned into something else, which we love, but it definitely had quite the metamorphosis throughout the process. Mm-hmm. Rasa, you can finish.
Yeah. I mean, it started out as kind of like, okay, we have a little bit more to say. Let's do a visual PBL book. You know, let's do one that's, you know, some of the books that we cite are Intention by Dan Ryder and Amy Burval, I think that's it. And The Space by Bob Dylan and Rebecca Hare. We saw those. Hey, like we could do a PBL book like that. And then to be honest, I think it was we started it late. Like we signed the contract and it took us like maybe half a year to get going from the time we signed the contract, just due to different things that kept coming up. And I remember I sat down, it was July 4th weekend 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2 years ago. And I just started writing and I started writing and I started writing. And Aaron was like, what the heck are you doing? I'm like, well, we have more to say. So it really morphed into much more than we thought it would be kind of. And by the time we published it, we had the minds, a couple things, like two in particular. I think one is that probably our last book that we write on inquiry and PBL. So if we have something to say, let's make sure we say it now. Mm-hmm. And also the idea that we wrote it in a way that, at least I did, that like almost to make our first book obsolete. Although the first book is still selling well, people should be buying the new book. It's the new book. It's the new better content. It's like three times as big as the first book. Not that we're not proud of the first book, but I believe it, and I think Aaron believes too. It encompasses all the good content from the first book, plus a whole lot more. We didn't want it to be one of those things where it's like, all right, like you have to get both of our books. No, like this is our latest and greatest book. This is the one we're promoting, get this one. And I think we're very proud of it. Like it went through a lot of drama, a lot of stuff happened, you know, from the signing of the contract to having the book in our hands, but we're very proud of it. Like we're very proud of it right now. I think it has, you know, it has an average 5-star rating on Amazon after like 23 reviews. And, you know, anybody who reads it, the feedback has been great. And lots of book studies too from organizations, like people saying, hey, I want 30 copies. I want to buy 70 copies. Like a lot of people saying, probably more so than the first book, hey, like we want to get this into the hands of everybody in our organization. And that's just cool. Like that's just really cool. That never gets old. And that's like to say that you're going to base your school or your district's work, you're going to base your work on our work and our book. Like that's powerful. And that's just really, really neat. And that means a lot. And that's really why we do this is to make a difference. And I think to take something as complex as project-based learning and convey what it is in a simple way. And that's tough, right? To take something mm-hmm. complex and to communicate what it is in a simple, understandable way. Like that's an art form in and of itself. And I'd like to think that's what we accomplished with this book.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, I've got copies of your Hacking PBL here in my office as well, right? You all have been so generous with gifting some copies. And, you know, for the new book, we're going to do a giveaway here on the podcast. So listeners, wherever you're listening to this, there'll be details of that on the show notes. But I think this is such a powerful tool for people who might feel like they need, you know, a little bit more, right? That support and understanding around PBL as they get ready to jump in. And so Aaron, before we finish up, I'd love for you to just share with us, where can people go to learn more about the book? Where can they go to learn more about your work?
The best place to learn more about the book is to go to realpbl.com. That's sort of a one-stop shop for everything book related. There's a ton of like freebies there, ebooks, giveaways. And then in addition, when you have the book, the realpbl.com website was sort of built. Ross did a really nice job putting it together so that it like mirrors the book itself. So like if there's a place in the book where we say, oh, and you know, you might want to use this resource or that resource, rather than you having to go out and find it yourself, everything is linked to the website. So it's almost like a companion guide to the book.
Awesome. And I know that both of your social handles and all of your contact info is right there at thatrealpbl.com. And I will make sure to link to it in the show notes for today. So thank you both so much for joining in for today's episode.
Thank you for having us.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
I'm so glad that Erin and Ross could join today to talk about project-based learning, some common questions, and of course, share a little bit about their book. If you are on my newsletter, so you can go to classtechtips.com/newsletter to grab your spot, you will see a link come through very soon for a giveaway for 5 copies. I've got 5 copies in my office of their book to give away. So make sure to go to classtechtips.com/newsletter to get on the list so that you can enter to win a copy of Erin and Ross's book. If you can't find the newsletter or you want to just send me a message on Instagram or Twitter instead, just reach out to me there and I'll make sure to get you on the list. Let's finish up this episode like we always do by working to make this EdTech a little bit easier. First, determine your PBL goals. Next, choose your system for staying organized. Then, bring students into the routine. And finally, add on to your PBL goals throughout the school year. Don't forget to head to classtechtips.com/podcast for more details about Erin and Ross's book, as well as ways to stay connected with them. You should also see some links underneath where you're watching this episode. If you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts or wherever you're listening, there should be a couple links underneath the description for today's episode that you can click on and explore. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or another favorite app, don't forget to hit the follow button. When you follow along with the podcast, each new episode will download for you automatically so you don't miss a thing. And if you have a moment and are feeling extra helpful today, please leave a rating or review for the podcast. It helps other educators find this podcast when they are searching for topics like EdTech in their podcast app. Have a great week and check back on Tuesday morning for next week's new episode.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast wherever you're listening.
A big thank you to our sponsor for this episode, Microsoft Education. I'm so excited to partner with them to bring you new episodes of the podcast this summer. Don't forget to check out their new Reading Progress tool in Microsoft Teams. This powerful fluency app can help students practice reading skills and give you actionable formative assessment data too. Learn more at aka.ms/readingprogresspp.